Good morning.
Greetings, everyone.
This is Friday, September 17th, 2021, and this is episode 232.
That's a lot of numbers there. 17th, 2021, 232.
Part three.
Yeah. Probably some very interesting, like, sum or square root or something.
You come There's up some with, sort of with all that Fibonacci shit in there, you know?
Yeah.
Fractals.
Yes. All right. Well, on a totally different note, completely unrelated to any of this, I did think that I found the perfect combination the other day when I posted that picture of pumpkin spice spam. I actually think that's a great combination because it's two food things that belong on the seventh rung of hell.
They
go well together.
I doubt this will surprise you, but in certain contexts, I like spam.
That doesn't surprise me.
I would saute that up with little cubes of that, with the pumpkin spice spam, with a little bit of sweet potato, make a little hash,
throw a lemony
hollandaise and put it over like a piece of rye bread and an egg. I think that would be actually tasty.
There you go. That is the Monday special at Ash's Diner. Right there. You just came up with that.
Okay. D.G. Hollums, for people who don't know, might be one of the world's greatest culinary experts. I'm just going to say that. And he says, I agree, spam is not horrible. Nobody else knows that he's the world's greatest culinary expert, but I just declared it. So
no. I was going to say, that's a well-kept secret.
I mean, he's got good taste. Good morning. Okay, one time I feel like DG and I have had expensive food together and he liked it, so I mean that's
you shared a can of spam while you were hopping trains across the country.
Our hands were like and letting it get greasy.
Yeah. Smearing it with some Vegemite.
No, that why I'd rather grab like get some bouillon and just spread it on toast. It's just nasty.
I don't understand. Well, pumpkin spice Vegemite, that could be the next big thing. See, now I got you excited. Look at that. Look at your face.
This is my own. I make my own pumpkin spice syrup. This is my iced pumpkin spice latte for the morning. DG says, I think so too. I know I've cooked a steak burger and probably a steak for you. Yeah. I mean, this is someone who knows meat and says, you know what? Spam. It's got its thing. So people are saying hello, and we should shift gears before we get lost in the hole of spam and pumpkin spice. To introduce ourselves, I am Ash Van Steenwyck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And it's Fascism Friday.
Yeah, Fascism Friday. Yeah. We're talking about the role of celebration in kind of both spirituality and kind of revolutionary politics.
Yeah.
And fascism is the opposite of partying.
Right. That was my main thought as I was contemplating today is that, you know, fascists don't want to have fun. And the fascists had scary parties, right?
You know, my imagination of like the parties that they had, I'm sure they had like, you know, the office should have dinner parties with wine and shit. But like, I think mostly what we think of is these big marches and like Colosseum parade which is a party built around discipline and honor and respect for the Führer kind of way of thinking, which is in a way is very anti-body and discipline centered.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Type of weird.
Yeah. Right. Well, and then, you know, and then all week with this conversation, I've been thinking a lot about the Roma people. And I was thinking about this concert that I went to once, strangely enough, was at NDSU, which is North Dakota State University.
Fighting Bison.
And somehow the music department there got this Roma, you know, this, and they called themselves this gypsy band to come. And it was just three guys. And so it was this two fiddle players and a guy that played this Roma instrument called a chubalum, which is, I know, it's a great name.
It sounds like, it sounds kind of sexual, but it also sounds like a name of a Pokemon. Chubalum. Yeah,
the chubalum, right? And it, which is kind of a xylophone type instrument. And I mean, these three guys, and the guy that played the second violin totally looked like a vampire. I mean, you know, it was a warm day. It was kind of warm in this auditorium. This guy was wearing this full length wool black coat, you know, kind of looked like he slept in it. He sort of looked a little bit like he hadn't gone outside and, you know, his whole life probably. But I mean, these guys were rocking. This was one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life, actually. I'm not, and that's not an exaggeration. And this music was so joyful, amazing, complex, exciting, beautiful. And it was very much, you know, like really good rock and roll, right? And I mean, way better musically and more complicated. But you know, and so this is a culture, right, that has an incredible, a vibrant history of celebration, of, you know, wild parties, of, you know, incredible dress and costumes and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, and of course, throughout Europe, throughout their history, the Roma peoples have been severely persecuted, especially by all the various fascist governments. You know, they kind of love to go after the Roma peoples, in part because they are highly subversive, right? They don't, you know, they don't go along with different norms of the local culture. They kind of do their own thing. They're viewed as sort of dangerous and sexy and, you know, kind of criminals and, you know, very misunderstood. You know, these were one of the groups that, for example, Hitler very specifically targeted for extermination because, yeah, they don't fit with that fascist, you know, manly, highly controlled behavior.
Alan writes, no, the fascists had parties where they would beat people up and abuse women. Right. And yeah, and I'll say more about that in a second, but Deborah's asking, was that the Alistair Fraser concert? Sure.
Yeah, I think that was the guy's name.
Yeah. I mean, this is interesting. Like, so the discipline marching band parade thing seems kind of, it's funny to make fun of, but this, it's still part of the same trajectory that what Ellen is bringing up here about, like, dominating people's bodies, abusing femininity, is all part of the same kind of mentality of the subjugation of flesh. Like, if we think about, like, toxic Christianity, where God is above, so transcendent as to be separate from creation, and that human beings are supposed to be above creation, and then our relationship with the land is one of subjugation, yeah, and dominance. And then, likewise, our own bodies, you know, are beastly. Sensuality is to be controlled like a caged beast, and we have to subordinate it to our will, our indomitable will, and not allow things like like this article floating around that came from John Piper's ministry that calls about the sin of empathy, not being too embodied. Don't get too compassionate.
Don't get too compassionate.
Because ultimately the relationship between we have with God or nation or whatever is the ultimate thing is one of obedience to authority. And then our relationship with our body is our will. Our body has to be subordinate to our will, which is a disembodied thing. And then anything that evokes kind of sensuality, which in Western culture, women do. Different societies that are more embodied and rooted and have too much fun, like the Roma. It's part of kind of the subjugation of trans queer peoples. It's like a bummer time. It's no party.
Well, and it also is very much connected, all the things you're describing so well. It's about trying to eliminate anything that is unpredictable, right? Trying to eliminate any kind of, openness, spontaneity, things that we don't know, right? This whole thing, like things that emerge, emergent properties, things that come out of, there's been a lot of critique about how the word darkness gets used in a negative way, but, that in some ways things that emerge from the darkness and the unknown are very positive and new and creative, right? And so, fascism, if we look at fundamentalism, right, this whole idea in Christian fundamentalism, like you have to know the answer to every question, right? There can be no questions that are where there isn't an answer and a Bible verse. Right? And one of the things about these parties and celebrations and sort of this wonderful mix of fun, spontaneity, creativity, attention, celebration, ritual, is that it's unpredictable, right? It's unpredictable. Like, wild and crazy things can happen. And that scene is very bad. And very negative, both within fascism, within fundamentalism, within all these kinds of movements, right? I mean, the problem with the sin of empathy, right? I can't even say that without laughing, right? Is that somebody may come along with a situation or a problem or whatever, and suddenly you may feel something different and maybe want to change your mind about something, right? Well, that's very dangerous. Like now maybe you've got a different answer to, that's not the right answer. So all of this celebratory activity, attention to celebratory activity, kind of cultivates this unknown and this mystery. And that's very anti-fascist.
I mean, it presents this issue, though. There's something about our society in the Western tradition, like fascism emerges for a reason. And it's not an aberration from the Western project. It's what happens when it's under a threat in a certain way. Systems will lean that way and we're shaped by those systems. And so to me, it's not so easy as to say, look, if you can know how to if we'd engage in some orgies every once in a while, there would never be fascism. It's not as simple as I think people want to bake it down into I'm a fun loving person. And this is,
with the finger waggles.
Yeah.
The fingers.
This is a set of issues of toxic relationships. And we can talk, this is where, it's weird to talk. It might seem jarring in a episode talking about partying that we're bringing up fascism, and I'm going to bring up intersectionality, the way in which these toxic relationships reinforce each other, so that we all have this tendency towards subordinationism that then abuses people who are lower in the hierarchy of being. And like, well, how is partying a response to that? Well, it's partying to me isn't like, it's not like, okay, if you have a kegger, everything is going to be great. It's about like, how do we then find, bring joy, mutuality, and delight into all of these relationships? Mm-hmm. Is kind of the big question. Like, okay, how do I enjoy my relationship with the land in a way that's not exploitative?
Mm-hmm. That's celebratory.
Yeah, that isn't one of just categorizing and subjecting and using for my resources, but like, I mean, this is where contemplation comes in. Like, you know, we might not think of it as partying. Like, and I make fun of my neighbor Joe, who you know, is a bird watcher, and I always make fun of, like, to me that's elderly people thing. Like, but he loves watching birds, and I give him shit about it because it's funny. But
He's got to keep an eye on the robots.
That's true.
They're keeping an eye on you, so that you need to keep an eye on them.
And anyway, as much as I am loath to somehow suggest bird watching as a form of partying, it's in that direction of like, he's just watching these birds for the joy of it.
Yeah.
That's a different relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a delight in a way that's mutual, that is participatory, that isn't one of domination. I mean, this to me is what the heart of celebration is all about, is entering into these life-giving relationships where you can delight and enjoy things for their own sake. And that is, if we could do that, and to me that's the heart of contemplation too, where we give our attention to something for its own sake without trying to dominate it. Even ourselves, like paying attention to our thoughts with curiosity and even finding joy in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's contemplation. Well, that's not trying, but, and it's messed up how much people use these prayer techniques as a way of controlling.
Control. Yes. Yes, exactly. I mean, I say this probably more than anything else. I mean, the greatest misunderstanding about contemplative techniques is that it is about controlling your thoughts. Right. And people have, you know, it's about being peaceful. Okay, I'm now going to be spiritual for 20 minutes or else. Right. And this idea that it basically is about letting your mind run wild and simply paying attention to that. And when you react, and you get caught up in something, and then you notice it, you just come back, right? And so, as you said, that is cultivating a very different relationship with our reality. And, you know, the entire, whether it's fascism, patriarchy, all these systems, as you say, that intersect, they're all about really trying to control what we're doing, what we're thinking, how we're feeling, right? I mean, this different relationship with fun and partying is also about a different relationship with emotion, right? And so, yeah, I mean, the partying to avoid emotion or suppress emotion is one thing, but celebrating to engage deeply in our emotional life, that's a different relationship with that.
Mm-hmm. Some comments coming in.
Yep.
James writes, fighting fascism through keggers feels deeply vocational. You know, and it's like, I mean, this is an interesting thing. Like, there, I brought this up. Like, you know, tomorrow I'm participating in a party and there'll be alcohol there, and I don't have a big problem with people getting a little knackered. But there is something about like the way. Like growing up in rural Minnesota, you get these repressed dudes going out and drinking and blowing off steam. And there's a way of drinking and alcohol and substance and partying that is kind of like, it's just a release valve for repression. And then there's ones where it's like, we're just enjoying it. And who cares if we color outside the lines a little bit? And it seems subtly different for people, but there, it's interesting. Like, so even just the idea of like, how one participates in the same party can be fascinatingly different.
Yeah. Well, yeah, one great example that I had in that, and so when I was at Berkeley and I lived in this co-op, the student co-op, and we had quite amazing parties at that place. But one of the things we used to do was, so we lived down the hill. There's this hill in Berkeley, and you know, one side of the campus is sort of up the hill. The other side is down the hill. So we lived down the hill. All the fraternities and sororities were up the hill. So one of the things we used to do is we would crash fraternity rush, and we would get made up, and we would wear, you know, all kinds of wild different clothing, and we would show up at these frat parties. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that was one of the most hilarious things ever. I mean, these other kids who are in this totally different culture, and there they are, like, and these parties were very uptight, and or you had a lot of people just chugging beer. And they didn't know what to do with us. It was really a lot of fun and very amusing. But that was a great example of a real different relationship with the exact same situation. All right, more comments.
Oh, wait. Ellen says, I love thinking of bird watching as a joy party. Very lovely. Yeah. Kathleen writes, one of the things I have noticed about myself is that I have not had much fun since the beginning of the pandemic. I feel isolated. Mm. You guys give me glimpses of joy. Thank you. You're welcome. Yeah. And this is a hard time. This is a hard time to party. Well,
right. Yeah. A lot of people have not had much fun these last couple of years, which is very, you know, it's very taxing, right? I mean, having fun is deeply a part of being human. And when we don't do that for a very long period of time, it's not good. Which gets to Catherine's comment.
Unfortunately, successful fascist regimes figure out that some limited degree of fun is necessary to keep their followers functioning. Cue images of Nazi bureaucrats partying on their days off from being cogs in the murder machine, Roman soldiers having a rager, etc. I mean, even in Handmaid's Tale, I mean, which I've been watching, like, they have the commanders going to basically these dance club brothel things, and there's always been that. Yep. And it kind of reminds me of these scenes where the general is wandering through the soldiers, and it's night before a battle, and he's like, "Drink heartily, boys. Tomorrow we bathe ourselves in blood." And so there's this sort of, again, one of my,
with that accent.
What accent is that?
I don't know. Vaguely Nordic, British.
Something in there. Norwegian.
With a little oofta thrown in. Oofta, yeah.
And it's kind of like this saying, like, this is not the norm. You do this to kind of like make yourself loose so that we can get about the real business. Which, yeah. Again, it's like, no. Recreation, delight is the norm. And we do these other things so that we can create space for it. Is kind of really more, I think, of how we're wired. Like, we do these things, we enjoy all this stuff. Like, you can find joy in work. But really, it's all that's to ultimately serve us building deep relationships that are joyful with one another. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we need to, like, and if we can do that, and groups that can do that, like, there's a powerful subversive potential in that and how they see the world. And then how they bring those relationships into contrast with the regime. Cheryl writes, I like watching birds. There are so many different kinds. Differentiation in nature is mind-boggling. Be one with nature, one with the universe.
Yeah.
Yes. And I'd make fun of bird watching a little bit. But I like birds. But I'm more of a tree guy. Like, I can spend time just sitting there noticing and looking at trees, and I'm sure that's even boringer to a lot of people. Trees are fun, man.
Trees are great. But, you know, the next iteration of robot birds might be robot trees.
You shut your mouth.
They don't even have to move around to spy on us. They just stand there and look at us.
I can't remember the name of the tree, but there's a tree that's roots are mostly above ground.
Yeah.
And it slowly moves.
Like, yeah, those are the swamp trees.
Oh, yeah,
I'm like, what are they called? You see them in the Everglades and stuff. Yeah, they're amazing.
I'm like, that's, and like, if you could time lapse that shit, It's just, you see these trees walking around.
Well, they're already time lapsing now. What they're doing is they're time lapsing you.
That's right.
They're not moving. You're moving.
Ellen writes, I misread that as fighting fascism through Kegels feels deeply educational. I'm not sure how that works, but it's possible. Let's try. Trees are Monty writes, trees are fun, man.
They are.
Ellen writes, even some of the trees are her spies.
Yes, they are.
A little bit of Wizard of Oz. CK writes, Lil Nas X and the Illuminati know how to have fun, LOL. But in all seriousness, why is fun synonymous with evil? That's a great question.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, to me, it relates a lot to this lack of control issue. Right. And I think that this also connects to Ash, what you were just saying a few minutes ago, and we use this language of centering now. You know, what are things centered around? What has priority, right? And you know, as you were talking, I was just thinking about this great book recently that I read about traditional African intimacy, which is an amazing book, and I know I mentioned it here before. And you know, it was interesting the way that this woman describes this traditional village culture. One of the things that she keeps emphasizing is that really what centers their life isn't, you know, work or obligation, these different sort of activities. What centers their life is ceremony, right? So all of these ceremonies, ceremonies about birth, ceremonies about death, ceremonies about marriage, ceremonies about friendship, ceremonies about problems. Like if two people are having a problem, there's a ceremony for that, right? You know, it's like there's an app for that. It's like there's a ceremony for that. And ceremony is what brings the village to life. You know, that's another way I think of thinking about, we've been talking a lot about this difference, you know, a fascist party, what's different from other, you know, more life-giving kinds of partying. I think it is that issue of centering, right? And so the party and the ceremony isn't just, yeah, hey, I've been out, you know, killing a lot of people today. I need to blow off some steam, so I'm going to go party. It's like, no, I have this ceremony, and then that helps me to be more human so I don't join a fascist regime and go out and kill all these people. And I think that that's the same thing with this issue of fun and evil, right? Is that if what centers our life are all these rules and regulations and a highly ordered hierarchical regime of life, that is kind of no fun, then having fun, right, centering my life around this fun has to be designated as evil. And I think it's really fascinating in Christianity in particular that you see that there are all of these very special holy days, right? Christmas, Easter, all these things, at times that used to be traditional ceremonial fun celebrations related to nature, right? And Christianity has taken over those sacred times and then often made them very oppressive and kind of miserable, even as they talk about that they are celebrating something.
Yeah, like we talk about celebrating the Eucharist, and I mean, I don't want to step on toes, but like usually it doesn't look like much of a celebration. I mean, think about, like, yes, it's solemn, but the idea that we are gathering together to constitute a new and life-giving way of being humans by
in a very serious
eating
way.
The flesh and blood of our God who conquered death. And that by consuming this, like whether you think of it as literal or not, we are participating in our defiance over death so that we can be a kind of humanity that challenges evil. Like that should be a fucking amazing feeling. But it's like, yes. Thank you, Lord.
And so it's like, here, have some styrofoam. You'll feel better.
Have some packaging peanuts. Ellen writes, Q memories of Midwestern Mardi Gras church potlucks where eating a donut is sinfully delicious. Most of those donuts are not that delicious.
No.
I want to go to, Eucharist with a baker's wife donuts. Freshly baked. Delicious. Cheryl writes, what book is that?
Yeah, I'll get the book in the, I'm blanking on the title right now. It's okay. An awesome book.
Rachel. All right. In Panama, where I'm from, we throw parties for everything. You got a new dog? Party. You got your floors retiled? Party. You finally got the mango tree moved? Party. How I try to.
Right.
I try to throw parties fairly regularly because it's so much fun just to be able to be with your friends. That's the only reason for living.
it's so amazing to me in so many places in WASP culture where you say, hey, this great thing happened. Let's have a party. Let's celebrate. And everybody looks at you like you're this weird alien that's suggesting something really bad.
There's also a class thing in this too. Like,
Wow.
I mean, I was talking to Charlie, who's my upstairs housemate, like a few years ago, and he was talking about, like, you know, it's interesting growing up. Like, and this is true. I did this. If you had a couch that you had to get rid of and you're going to like just put it in like on the driveway and burn it, like, because that's how you get rid of shit in the rural areas. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but like you'd burn a couch and you'd call up like, hey, Gary, I'm going to burn my couch. You want to come over? Right. And you'd sit there and drink beer as you're sitting there watching your couch burn. I'm like, that's maybe not an exciting party, but that's still kind of this mentality of like, I got to do this thing and I'd love it if you could join me because I got to pass time and I'd like to, like, we need more of that kind of thing. Maybe not the couch burning, but what Rachel's talking about. Heather writes, we know Jesus wept because they told it. They wrote down. What they left out is Jesus danced. It would help to remember that.
Yeah.
And we alluded to this, I think, on Monday. Like, they would have just known that. Like, when Jesus at a wedding feast, they just all knew what happened at a wedding feast, so they didn't have to spell it out. It's the weeping was out of the kind of social convention norm, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So that was written down. Yeah. But like, maybe. But like, we have a very austere, sad legacy, so we don't read between the lines as well, and so we assume Jesus is a boring ass Scandinavian. Sorry, Scandinavians. Most people from Scandinavia party better than people from the United States, but whatever. It's the white people.
CK, all right, well, we're past time, so we gotta
blaze. Yeah,
through.
So obedience, and deviance. Reference. Yeah, we need to be sacred deviants.
Yes.
Sacred subversives. Yes. Rachel writes, that sounds very metal. Ha ha ha. I'm not sure what thing sounds metal.
Oh, that was the eating flesh and blood and conquering death.
I was hoping you were talking about the burning of couches, but whatever. That's metal to me.
No.
A little bit of Metallica in the background. Yeah, Coors Light. Nah. Ellen writes, again, learn from Ethan Hughes of Possibility Alliance. He said communities need a celebration an average of every 10 days to thrive.
Yeah.
Cheryl writes, African ceremony, I think of Ubuntu. There were our ceremonies around a misbehaving child to help him be whole. Well, that's great. I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. No, this woman's talking about that. I mean, ceremonies around everything.
Yeah. You know. Rachel writes, the Eucharist, that is, which explains my emo phase. James writes, my feeling is that churches don't know how to do joy. Or lament or sorrow. Yes.
Or anger. Yes.
Or anger. Yes. Quick feelings. So Dorothy Sola talks about this avoidance of suffering causes us to clip off all of our emotions. And so we have this pathological middle class tendency to not have deep emotion. I feel like part of the learning to party means recovering the ability to feel what we should feel in the spiritual life. Yes.
Yep. Yeah. No, right now, you know, we basically have kind of like one feeling. Right, like I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm okay.
That's one feeling. Yep. And as they say, one is the loneliest number. All right. Moving on.
Harry Nilsson. Good stuff. Kathleen writes, one time I was this at a meeting great. Where we had a worship. Kathleen, one time I was at a worship where we had an amazing praise team. I was so moved, I danced in the aisle. Then I realized the bishop was there, and I sat in my seat with my head down like I'd done something bad. Aw.
Yeah.
You're the only one doing something good.
I know. That's right.
Rachel writes, Q's memories of very cringe and waspy renditions of Lord of the Dance.
That's right. That's right. I'm the Lord of the Dance in a very undancing kind of way.
Yeah. Ellen writes, boiling maple sap was great parties. Yeah, that's... Yeah, you definitely need to pass the time. How about grocery shopping parties, laundromat parties?
There you go.
James writes, party on. Excellent. CK, angry, ineffective, and fine.
Fine.
Yeah, fine.
All right. Well, that's a great way to end our week. Thank you very much, everybody. It's great to be with you. And remember, partying is anti-fascist.
Be excellent to one another.
Yes.
And party on, dudes. See you next week.
See you next week.